show tune out. Are you ready? Goes like this.
You're listening to WWBC, Cocoa, Melbourne, Titusville, 1510 AM, as well as W234BI, Cocoa, Rockledge, and W264AS, Rockledge, Melbourne, Palm Bay, and 100.7 FM.
Hello, space and treasure coast. This is Sita Begee on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends right here in sunny Cocoa, Florida. We're heard on AM 1510, WWBC, FM 94.7, 99.9, 100.7, and online everywhere on God's magnificent planet. All you have to do is go to the WWBC website. You will hit listen live and you can hear us in India, Indonesia, Canada, Thailand, anywhere where there is the World Wide Web, we can be heard. We sit here on Mondays, Ellen O'Neill, myself, and Ali Tambor, and we talk to people here in the United States, in Brevard County, Florida, all over our nation, all 50 states, all over the world. We talk about kitchen table topics, anything to do with financial literacy, the environment, a quality public education for all. We talk to politicians. We talk to lots of authors, nonprofits, singers, actors, whatever people want to chat about. We give them a platform on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. And today is no different. Ali Tambor is sitting in for Ellen O'Neill today. Welcome to our show, Ali.
Good
and thank
afternoon.
You for being here.
Not a problem. This is always a joy for me. I look forward to Mondays.
Monday seems to be the day for me that I get my house cleaned. My housekeeper comes on Mondays. Then I go to the gym. Then I come here. Then I see Danny and I hear about his fishing and all that.
Yeah.
It's just a wonderful day, Monday. It's the start of the week and it signifies a show for us, bringing people in our station, meeting new friends, getting new ideas, and having a fun, unscripted, educational, and quite interesting show.
So. Yeah. Different every week.
That's right. Our guests are in the studio today. I met a lovely lady, Taisha Pittman, and she is a perinatal mental health counselor, and she's got her own business. Thank you for being here today.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Yes, and your topic is so important. We're going to be talking about pregnancy and moms and kids and what we should be doing to make sure that not just the babies are born healthy and happy, but that the moms then... their journey is also one that we care about. Our second segment is with a friend of mine that I met, Lauren Kennedy. And for our listeners who are tuning in, you probably know that Sita Begee, myself, I can speak to the wall and make friends with that wall.
Indeed.
And find a candidate for my show. So Lauren is here. And Lauren is also an educator like Taisha. And she's going to be talking about art and therapy and she will talk about herself facilitating art in her classrooms in high school and how it helps the students with bullying and self-esteem and broken homes and just gives children and students a way out in the classes and why teachers should care and why we should care about making sure that our politicians don't cut art funding in our schools as well. So welcome to our show as well.
Thank you so much. I'm so happy to be here.
Right, so we're going to start off with Taisha Pittman, and such an easy name to say, who is a licensed mental health counselor right here in Brevard.
Yes.
Thank you so much for being here. Tell our listeners a little bit about yourself and how you got involved with your art, which is helping people, mental health.
Yes. Being a native of Brevard County and having graduated from Rockledge High.
All right.
And just being around with my mom as she worked at the hospital, I did a little bit of teenage volunteering in the pediatrics wing at Wusthof, as it was called back in the old days. And growing up around kids, being a babysitter, going off to school to University of Central Florida, just got my interest in, you know, wanting my own family one day. And growing in my development as a young woman, working with children as an elementary school teacher, I was able to see the interaction between mothers and children long before my husband and I had children. And then I decided, you know, it's our time. We spoke about it, and we decided to have our children. I had my first daughter at 37 and my second daughter at the age of 40. And in between those two children, we unfortunately and sadly lost a baby. And after the second daughter, I experienced postpartum depression pretty rapidly and pretty heavy. And I went to my obstetrician and asked her, you know, hey, this isn't going away. I'm having these symptoms. And as a school counselor and being a mental health professional, I had some idea of what I was going through was not typical. The typical baby blues, as they like to call them, it was so much more than that. Asked my mom some questions, my mother-in-law, a couple of other women, couldn't get the information that was satisfying to my soul in order to feel better. And my doctor, as wonderful as she is, offered a prescription, but I was like, there's got to be more. I knew that their therapy would have been helpful, but I was like, is there something specific? And in my journey of being a mental health therapist, I discovered there is a field that specifies the needs of moms and women who desire to have children, are in the midst of pregnancy, and the postnatal periods of their lives. And so it's personal.
Yeah.
It's a personal journey. It's something that I want to be with a woman who is in her very first prenatal
steps. Yeah, because you've been there.
I have been there. And, you know, when you hear terms like geriatric pregnancy, you're thinking, I'm 30 years old. What do you mean geriatric?
Yeah, my mother had her last child at 42.
Okay.
But, you know, you bring back a lot of memories because I remember my mom having a lot of issues. She gave birth to 11 children. And I remember now that you're talking about the compassion and, you know, what we should be looking, the signs and symptoms of postpartum depression and stuff like that. I remember my mom coming home and either yelling and screaming because she couldn't cope or getting quiet, just taking her broom and sweeping and us having to watch the little ones and crying, a lot of crying. And, you know, money talks. If you have money, you can get medication, a counselor. But in the villages, people don't have that. And it was hard for her, and it's almost like no one wants to talk about it because it's such a stigma, right?
Absolutely. We are kind of in a society where it's super mom. You can do it all. I often tell clients, women are kind of groomed to be the hostesses of life. We kind of go around and make sure everyone else is okay. Is everything okay? Are you fine? Do you have enough water? Are you sleepy? Take a nap. You know, we make sure everyone else is okay except for us. And then when this precious little baby comes along, it's, where's the baby? How's the baby? And then you're just standing there thinking, but what about me? I'm tired. I haven't slept. I really don't know how to put this diaper on correctly. And I've been up all night, and the baby's not nursing correctly. They're just a plethora of things that can happen. And the symptoms don't always look the same on every woman. Sometimes she may go into rapid mood swings. When you mentioned your mom, I remember going outside and raking leaves to feel normal. I didn't feel normal. I was like, let me do something I know how to do correctly. I know how to rake leaves.
Right, and you're judged because you've got a partner that expects a happy, compassionate woman when he comes home from work or wherever, right?
Absolutely.
People want their meals cooked. They want the dishes washed, their clothing put away, a clean home, and a baby all decked off to show the whole world. But the mom is not feeling it. And so do you see that in your practice that this is affecting a lot of African-American women as well? Because there's a cultural, it's culturally we all watch what's going on with different races and different cultures and different people of different faith. You see it predominantly in the African-American community from the people you service as well?
I do see it. And there's, you know, a cultural stigma that, you know, you should be able to do this. Your mom did it. Your grandma did it. Your great-grandma did it. You should be able to handle this. This is not a problem. And, you know, I have seen women that are just like, no, this really is a problem. And then they're told, no, it's not. I handled it. You'll handle it, too.
It's really not talked about at all.
No,
it's like, just, you know, make the best of it and move forward. What's wrong with you?
And now you think there's a guilt issue. It's normal.
Yes.
It's not normal for a woman to give birth and not feel good about herself.
No.
So let's talk about the self-esteem part of this. Could some of this have preceded, like been before this person was having issues before the pregnancy and it went undetected?
Yes.
And now you throw in a baby in the mix and not sleeping, you know, engorged breasts with pain.
Mm-hmm.
You know, your bladder is not in place yet. You've got a lot of changes. Let's talk about the changes that, well, what happened before the woman got pregnant?
Yes, the social, emotional changes. Like if you were a super social person and you were going out all the time, you're now home alone most times with this baby who doesn't have the communicative skills to tell you what's wrong except for screaming and crying. And so oftentimes the mom ends up screaming and crying as well, and she doesn't want to call her girlfriends or her mom because it starts to start looking like you're whining.
Mm-hmm.
Or perhaps you can't handle it in some way. And I have found with a lot of long-term situations is that, you know, Black women have this stigma and this staple in the community of one way or another, either they're, you know, the angry Black woman who should be able to handle
everything. They're labeled.
Or they're lazy and trifling and can't take care of themselves and need someone else to do it. So I think it's important that, you know, women of all cultures and ages experience this postpartum. And oftentimes we hear postpartum depression, but there's also a level of anxiety. And it can also go to a level of psychosis. So we have to be very careful on how we define what a woman is going through. And I might note that this depression can also fall onto the fathers. Dads also experience postpartum experiences with the depression and anxiety and OCD. Like if a mom is so worried about the baby bottles and she washes them over and over again, or she's washing her hands over and over again because she's afraid. I have discovered a lot of moms who had babies during the pandemic are experiencing the OCD part of it, and they're just so scared that the baby might get sick. So I think all of these things are very important. There's the diagnostic level of diagnosis that goes along with it. This is a real thing. It's not just a made-up thing, and it doesn't go away by itself, but with treatment and therapy, women can survive it. I am proof of that.
So how do they without guilt or little guilt go and ask for help? Or where do they go to ask for help? Or can the husband get trained so that he might be able to pinpoint something that's off? And then say, honey, let's work on this together or something.
Well, that's when they call Tysha Pittman.
Yes.
This
absolutely.
Is a good time to give your website and your phone number.
Yes. This is you absolutely reach out to professionals who have been trained to handle these issues and to get in contact with me at Pittman Perinatal Mental Health. My phone number is 321-613-8553. My website is Listening Ears, plural ears, the number 2.weebly.com. And you just start a conversation. So many times people, after their first therapy session with me, they're just like, oh, that wasn't so bad. And I just say, it's talking and being listened to and learning how to take those emotions and validate them, give them the value that they deserve, no matter what they are. And then being able to cognitively speak on them to the ones who are in your life, in your tribe, in your circle, and advocate for yourself, speak for yourself, because the more we talk about it, the more it's normalized, the more that it's okay, it's accepted, and that if this is your experience, you have somewhere to go, even if it's just to talk about how irritated you are and annoyed you are that your life has changed so much, because a lot of times the partner's life has not changed very much, but the mommy's life has changed abundantly.
Right. And And I don't think people understand this either, but mental health affects the unborn baby as well.
Yes, it does.
And I'm sure you see that too.
I have. I have spoken with moms and I asked them, what was your birthing journey? Or what has the first trimester been like for you? And then I educate them, do a little psychoeducation and say, this is what you need to do because I want you to have what is known as a postpartum plan. Before that baby gets here, we need to sit and talk about what do you have in place in order to support your mental health, your physical health? What is the environment going to be like for you, the baby, and whomever else is in your home? Because I didn't have a postpartum plan. My plan was my mother-in-law will be there with me and my husband, and I will go back to work after my leave is over. That was the extent of my plan. My plan was not sitting on my floor and crying in the kitchen, not remembering whether I had washed the
box. Or a lot of people just make plans. Well, mm-hmm. In 6 weeks, I'll take the baby to the daycare.
Yes.
But it doesn't stop at the daycare door. Because then you have to get back in the car, and now you're responsible for life.
Life, yes.
Right? And the father is responsible as well. But we all know as mothers, as women, that the responsibility falls mostly on the woman.
Yes.
To pack that diaper bag, one for him, one for you, mm-hmm. right? To make sure the daycare is paid. Make sure your bills are paid at home.
Mm-hmm.
Who's going to apply for what, right? Because my daughter paid $400 a week for daycare. That's $1,600 a month, right? And it put a burden on finances at home as well.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure you see people that say, hey, I didn't realize that bringing this life into the world would be so complicated. And that in itself causes depression because we all see people who have economic woes, they get depressed.
Yes. And those burdens fall on you unexpectedly. And the expectations or the dreams that you had are now shattered because it's not what you thought it would be. You know, that moment you tell somebody, guess what, I'm pregnant. They celebrate, but they don't tell you all of these other things that come along with it. You know, that first time the baby has a fever and you're trying to figure out how to take the temperature. And so there are screeners that are in place, assessments that can be given to women in the first trimester, second and third, and 6 weeks after the baby is delivered to determine that level of depression or anxiety. So I think that that's another way for people to know. If you're going through a little something, speak with your doctor. Speak with someone if you had your baby through a doula or any other way in a birthing center. Speak with these people who are in your life so that they can assist you because we want to make sure that you have short and long-term successes as a mom.
Right. And postpartum depression, that's only part of the mental health issue that goes on with a mom, is anxiety.
Yes.
Depression.
And guilt.
Guilt. And then a lot of times the moms watch to see if the baby's breathing.
Oh, yes.
They're
oh, yeah.
scared.
Mm-hmm.
So what can we tell our listeners here on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, girls who are pregnant, women who are pregnant, saying, this is a life-changing experience for me. And what should I be looking out for, some of the signs and symptoms of postpartum depression or before they give birth, right?
Some of the things that you can look for are...
Perinatal,
yes. Yes. The strange obsessions or beliefs, like I need to wash my hands 12 times to make sure I don't give the child germs. Hyperactivity, that's not something that most people would think would be a symptom or a sign, but it is. As well as a chosen decrease in sleep or eating. These are signs we need to look out for. Rapid mood swings, as I mentioned before, or difficulty communicating. If the mom was a gentle, easy communicator and all of a sudden she's screaming and yelling all the time or she's snapping back, these are symptoms to look for and make sure because oftentimes they are ignored and they are just labeled as typical behaviors. Oh, she's just a new mom. She'll get used to it. She'll get over it. But that's not the case because in actuality, 15 to 20% of women experience more significant symptoms of depression and anxiety than most people even know. And it's important that in order to prevent these symptoms from getting worse, that you really need to just sit down and know that you don't have to continue to suffer.
Well, Tisha, is there, are the caregivers, medical caregivers and helpers, you know, like the perinatal ones, are they coached in be on the lookout for those kinds of things? Because it, I don't ever, you know, of course that was 50 years ago, but I don't ever remember anybody saying, look, this could happen, this could happen, the kinds of things, any sort of prep so that you're not going, am I nuts? Or am I just, you know, is this an okay thing?
Well, in the recent past, there are lots of collaborations. For instance, I collaborate with a women's center here in Brevard County, the Hibiscus Women's Center down in Melbourne. So we talk and we collaborate in order to have moms understand what it is that they are going through in terms of their pregnancy and what to look out for, and with their partners, in order to say, okay,
this isn't right.
This is not right. Yeah. This is more than just 1 or 2 weeks. This has been going on for a while now. This is 6 weeks after the baby's been born, and she's still not quite herself. Let's have a conversation. The guilt that you spoke of not being able to do it just right. I can't emphasize enough that there is no perfect woman. There is no perfect mom, and no matter how high we hold our mothers up to, our moms had her struggles too.
Right, and the thing is, you know, sometimes moms just need a couple of hours break.
Yes.
So let's talk about giving them that well-needed rest and relaxation. Like if you've got your sister or a best friend, or somebody that the mom could trust with that baby.
Yes.
But it's not that the mom should, even if the mom is in the house but in another room, give them that period of relaxation, right?
Yes, and I think that that's an important piece of that postpartum plan,
mm-hmm.
to start grabbing those folks who you know will have the flexibility in their schedule and in their promises to come and support and assist you with the baby. Because like I said, it doesn't have to be a vacation, just an hour or two of quiet so that maybe she can meditate. Or perform some mindfulness.
Or go to the gym.
Or go to the gym for a walk.
Dr. Tisha Pittman, tell me something. We see all these young people coming out of colleges or vocational training or whatever, and some don't want to listen to their moms, right. and grandma.
Mm-hmm.
They would listen to the American Pediatric Association and the medical this and that. But moms and grandmas are such a good source of information. And why is it some of our girls, they feel like, well, wait a minute, that's a little bit too old-fashioned for me. You tell them how to burp the baby, and they say, well, I just read it online. You're supposed to do it. Well, guess what? We've been doing it for years, right?
Yes.
And sometimes they don't want to listen to just common folks.
Mm-hmm.
Do you see a lot of them that say, well, my mom told me to do that, and I didn't listen?
Yes, and then they circle back and end up doing it.
Yes.
And they say, oh, it worked.
Right. And I notice in your practice, you also speak to women who are having menopause issues, infertility.
I do.
And we see now in our country, a lot of women are worried about their fertilized eggs.
Yes.
That they were going to use later on through
IVF.
Yes, IVF, right?
IVF.
And that can bring on some depression, not knowing that if you have cancer or something is wrong with you or you have a medical illness and you can't carry that egg to full term. People are sitting down in their homes and their wheels are spinning. They're worried.
Yes.
Do you see people in your practice that worries about menopause and infertility and things like that?
Absolutely. And, you know, when I speak with them, I give them a gentle ear. We speak realistically, but with kindness and compassion, because we're talking about their lives presently and in the future, and their hopes and dreams, and the possibility of them being shattered because of reality. But my clients that are facing infertility, I speak a lot with them and collaborate with their medical professionals to find out where they are in the process in order to support them. Because sometimes they just want to unload. They want to have a place to unload the fear.
Because it's a waiting game.
It's a fear, yes.
And it's anxiety. It causes so much anxiety. I've spoken to women who has been waiting.
Yes.
And that in itself can throw you off your game.
Yes, the right? Rumination of things not coming to fruition for them is very painful and very real. And so I allow them to express their fear and the reality behind it and the options that they have, because they may not be ready to think about adoption or surrogacy or those other steps. They are still in the desire to have their own baby.
Right. So for our listeners who are tuning in, we're speaking with Taisha Pittman, who's a licensed mental health counselor, and she's the owner of Pittman Perinatal Mental Health. Taisha, your bio is quite extensive. You're also a member of the Space Coast Mental Health Counselors Association, the American Psychologists Association, the American Counseling Association, and the American Mental Health Counselors Association, and the Florida Maternal Mental Health Counselor. You also blogged for a little bit, and you had a piece that was featured in a newspaper in Tallahassee.
Yes, yeah, the Tallahassee Democrat.
Talk to us about that, because, you know, the mental health, anxiety, the depression, all of that also ties into bullying.
Yes, it does.
Self-esteem, mm-hmm. and how people felt before they went into a pregnancy.
Yes. It all ties together. Having had so many years of working with children allows me to go back with clients to say, what was your childhood like? What is it your parental plan is to become, to have past having the baby? Because it's not just having the baby, it's becoming a parent. And being able to have been a blogger for the Democrat for so many years allowed me to interact with the community and get their feedback and find out what they were really thinking in terms of parenting, education, and now leading into what I do now in terms of therapy.
Yeah. And, you know, we all hear this term, lead by example, right?
Yes.
And many young women are looking up to us, the people with experience, the bolder, wiser ones, to talk about comprehensive sex education as well as academic and trade. Where do you think some of us in all communities, all cultures, all faiths, what has happened in that young women and young men are not being educated properly by us? It's our responsibility, because we're seeing a lot of girls having children out of wedlock.
Yes.
And we see the hardships that come and the sacrifices they have to make, give up the education, work the two jobs, try to get Medicaid expanded for them. Mental health, dental health, physical health. What can we do, all of us collectively as women, to empower each other and help our young ones?
I think having speaking engagements, going into the schools, going into community centers, and providing opportunities for them to not only listen to what it is that we have to say, but to hear what they have to say and truly listen and take note of it, not just have the conversation and move on your happy way onto your next event or right. day, but to actually say, I hear what you're saying, and let's do something about it. Let's give you some resources in which you can not only just throw on your countertop or on your refrigerator, but call a number and speak with someone about your concerns, and let's educate them, teach them as young as possible, because having been an elementary school counselor, they need to know as early as possible. And we can't just leave it to the
schools.
And
so many people are at risk, because we know that just having a menstrual cycle, how difficult that is on a monthly basis, right?
Yes.
And then you throw in a pregnancy and perinatal health, right? Where
yes.
people are not recognizing that is a serious mental health problem.
It really is.
So with the remaining minute or so, what can you tell our listeners about why they should pay attention, not just to emotional and physical and financial and everything else health, but also perinatal health? Because you're bringing that to the forefront for our listeners, that if someone comes home to them and say, hey, I'm having a baby,
mm-hmm.
there's a lot of stuff that goes with that.
Oh, yes.
And so we ought to be paying attention and educating ourselves about this 9 months and the plan after.
So I think the most important part is to know that there is help out there, that there's no subject too light or too silly or too embarrassed to speak of when it comes to becoming pregnant, no matter what age, and that you have access to someone who has actually been trained in what it is that you're going through. It's not just some passing thing, but that your mental health, it affects your physical health, your spiritual health, mind, body, spirit. And so to tap into perinatal mental health will allow not only to help the mom, but the baby and those who are in that woman's life in order for her to have her definition of what success looks like and what it feels like as a woman and as a mother. So I think that if anyone wonders, well, why, what's the point? Why do you need perinatal mental health? The point is that it is the beginning of life for a child that can make a difference in our future.
Right. And moms are birthing the future citizens, right?
Absolutely.
I've always said that when you give birth to a child in the hospital or in a birthing center or wherever, there should be like a questionnaire that the mom has to fill out. Do you care about quality public education for this child? Check yes or no. Do you care about the environment in which this child is going to be raised? Yes or no. Who is going to be watching this child when you're employed outside of the home?
Mm-hmm.
Write the name down. Do you have health insurance? Do you have a safe place to live? Do you have Medicaid expanded in your city or town? Because I think when you leave the hospital with this beautiful baby, no matter what race or religion or faith,
mm-hmm.
that you should know what you're dealing with. This is a life that needs you. It's dependent on you and the person that helped you to bring the child, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think our hospitals have enough, being a nurse myself, nursing personnel, or even the social workers that says, here's the form, fill it out and check everything on here. And then we know what the plan is when you get home with this baby,
mm-hmm.
right?
And even if the plan doesn't go, you know, perfectly, at least there's a template, there's a guide, there's something there, not just winging it.
Right.
Because you want to be able to say, okay, I'm being intentional
right.
about myself and this baby.
And it should be like if you miss a couple of things on that questionnaire, well, if you don't care about the environment, why not? Where do you live? Do you live in Flint, Michigan, where you have to worry about the water quality?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I mean, it. People say they don't want to talk about politics, but life is politics. From the kind of diaper that baby's going to wear and the kind of milk it's going to drink, kind of education you're going to give it till the day it goes off to college, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So give us your website one more time.
Absolutely.
And your phone number so that all listeners can go on your website, call you and get an education about perinatal health, postpartum health, and what we can do to make a plan to help each other.
Yes. Once again, you can reach me at area code 321-613-8553. And my website, listeningears2.weebly.com.
So for our listeners who are tuning in, we are going to take a quick station break and listen to our sponsors. And we'll be right back with our little friend here, Lauren Kennedy, who I just met at the Century Country Club last week, 4th of July, on America's birthday.
There we go.
We'll talk about art and students in high school.
Cloud 9 Mattress and Furniture is a family-owned furniture dealer featuring the best and most affordable brands. They offer all servicing for free. The delivery, setup, and home, removal of old furniture, and warranty. Work with a reputable and experienced local business as they strive for excellence with their customers. Scotty's been in the mattress and furniture business for 32 years. You can shop online, call, or stop into the showroom to place an order. They are conveniently located inside the Merritt Square Mall and service all of Brevard County in Central Florida. Super savings sale happening now. That's Cloud 9 Mattress and Furniture, 321-459-2473. Visit them on the web at cloud9furniture.com. Again, 321-459-2473 for Cloud 9 Mattress and Furniture.
Are you longing for a taste of Louisiana? Lizette's Cajun Bistro is the place to be. They offer Cajun and Creole staples as well as American, vegan, and vegetarian options. The restaurant is located at 2447 North Wickham Road, Unit 146. All menu items are prepared daily from scratch and made to order. Dine in or take out as well as outside seating. Live music on selected weekends. So the next time you have a taste for Louisiana, stop by Lizette's Cajun Bistro, 2447 North Wickham Road.
Located in Titusville, Florida, Dixie Crossroads has been serving great-tasting seafood, char-grilled steaks, prime rib, chicken, fresh salads, and their famous corn fritters for over 31 years. The menu features the very best local shrimp and fish from Port Canaveral and ranges from low-cost sandwiches and baskets to high-end seafood combos. Visit this Florida favorite at 1475 Garden Street in Titusville. That's Dixie Crossroads, 321-268-5000. 321-268-5000, or visit them on the web at dixiecrossroads.com. Jotkoff Financial Group is a certified public accounting and a registered investment advisory firm with over 30 years of productive relationships with clients. Jotkoff Financial Group can assist you in meeting your accounting, tax, and business consulting and financial planning and insurance needs without expanding your internal workforce. With three locations here in Florida, here in Brevard County, Broward County, and Nassau County, contact Jotkoff Financial Group here in Brevard at 321-984-7345. Located at 1122 South Wickham Road in Melbourne, that's Jotkoff Financial Group. On the web, you'll find them at www.jotkoff, that's JOTKOFF.com. Call the professionals at Jotkoff Financial Group today.
There's something special about the place we call home. It's the place we live our lives, spend time with family and friends, and make our own. At St. Francis Reflections Hospice, we consider it a privilege to care for you wherever your home may be. We put our hands, hearts, and skills into providing high-quality hospice care in your home. To learn more about how we reflect life, love, and compassion, visit www.reflectionslsc.org.
Welcome back, dear listeners. This is Sita Begee on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends right here in sunny Cocoa, Florida. We are heard on AM 1510, WWBC, FM 94.7, 99.9, 100.7, and online everywhere on WWBC. Just hit the live button. Ali Tambor is filling in today for Ellen O'Neill. Ellen is stuck at the car dealership with her car, trying to get it fixed.
Yeah.
She needs her wheels.
Yeah. How about that first segment? That was fabulous. Where were those people when 50 years ago, when my son was born?
Tysha Pittman, thank you so much.
Just stick it up. Yeah.
Yeah. I would like to see your program in all our high schools and middle schools, where you could go in and speak with our students.
There are levels and that would be appropriate for all of that.
Yeah,
yes, absolutely.
We all talk about age appropriateness.
Yes.
Some middle schoolers that need to hear this stuff, how difficult it is when you do get pregnant.
I agree.
Yeah, wait for the right time and the right person, right?
Because it's challenging. Yeah. It's a daily struggle.
Right.
It's a beautiful thing, but it's a daily struggle.
Sure. Thanks again.
My pleasure.
So our second segment is with Lauren Kennedy, and Lauren is an artist and a teacher and a therapeutic art facilitator, exploring how art materials can be tools not just for nurturing, but for soothing and for giving our students hope, helping them with anxiety and nervousness and depression and self-esteem issues. And I'm speaking from experience here because I've seen where a lot of people, their refuge is art. So welcome to our show and tell us a little bit about why you got so involved, our school teacher here, with art and her students.
Mm.
Well, I think art has been a love of mine since as young as I can remember, really. In my own personal life, it's been a saving grace and a confidant and just a beautiful, safe place to express and to give all of myself. And I found that it helped me, because it helped me to get through things that were difficult in my life and still does to this day. And just because it connects me to my soul, to things that may be challenging to express in words, I just find it so valuable. And it's something that I just feel so inspired to share. You know, it's like that thing that connects me to my purpose that I feel like I'm here to do, you know?
You said the same thing, that you found that having your own journey as a mom and being pregnant, it helped you to have your business where you can help other people.
The insight.
Right. It gives you energy.
Definitely good roadmap.
Right, right. It gives you that energy to keep going, because you're taking your passion and you're turning it into something that is so gratifying. Because, you know, you're helping other people. Yeah. So, Lauren, you also, you were at a camp counselor, and where you did applied behavior analysis as well with children, right? Mm-hmm. So talk to us a little bit. You and I chatted a little bit about kids and having step parents and single parents and multifamily and generational family. And all these things affect children, don't it?
Oh, yes.
Yeah. And definitely. You see them at camp.
Yeah.
You see them
at camp.
At
even
school.
In my, yeah. I was a kindergarten teacher for a time, and, you know, I would watch how split homes, you know, kids would start anticipating the transition day between parents, or they'd be sad once they had switched households, you know. And so there's a lot of things that will come into the classroom from life outside of school as well. And yeah, I just think that art can be that place. To express. I also, so you were mentioning applied behavioral analysis therapy, and I was specifically working with children who were predominantly nonverbal, and there's so many ways that we have to communicate, and I really learned that during that experience, those years. But art, too, can be such a great way to, you know, if you can understand everything that's going on around you, but maybe there are people who assume that you're stupid or don't know what's going on and treat you that way. Or maybe you have a thought and you want to express it in words, but you can't get it out. And so there's that barrier to connection. Art can be such a beautiful way to get out the frustration, or, you know, to express
right.
in a way that's very tangible and kinesthetic. You know, it can be that bridge, so to speak.
It's essential to our well-being,
yeah.
right? Art is, I mean, all of us... many of us have seen Lenny Kravitz with his shirt and his guitar, and he says, just writing my songs make me feel good.
Mm.
Just being who he is, right?
Yeah.
And it is an art form.
Mm. Oh,
people
yes.
use poetry, or they write songs, they
mm-hmm.
sing
music.
Songs, they draw, because this is their safe space.
Oh, yeah.
This is where it helps them, their mental health, their creativity, their creative juices keep flowing, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they feel good about themselves. And you witnessed this firsthand in your classrooms.
Yes, definitely.
Right. Yeah. So talk to us a little bit about, you know, they said that every child is an artist. Mm-hmm. And the problem is that some children are told to do something or not to do something based on how it looks. And we were talking earlier about it's okay for children to have dark moods. It's okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, actually, that's one of the things that I feel particularly passionate about within the realm of artistic expression, is allowing that full range of emotional expression, because I think that's often when children, people in general, you know, even adults, when we have... not express something right, you know, there's certain traditions that believe that the root of disease is emotions that have reified they've become stuck and stagnant because we haven't had a place to put them, or we didn't know how to express them or what to do with them.
Well, like
we,
they say, let it go, like yes, Frozen.
Yes, let it yes.
go. And
yes.
you're absolutely correct, because I know when we were growing up back home in Trinidad and Tobago, there would be people in our village who would just yell and scream at each other and get it all out. And then next day they're playing calypso and they're dancing and they're fine. And people are like, didn't they just have a big fight yesterday? And screaming and yelling and hollering. Yeah. And today they got a bottle of rum and they're dancing.
Yeah.
They had to let it out. They had to, right?
Yes.
So that's an art form, if you ask me.
Well, and you can even do that. I mean, that's one of the things. So I've also done private work with individual teenagers. Some of them were also my students that I was teaching in the high school. And, you know, I had a clay table. Like, I had converted a table to hold clay, and we leveled out the clay. And I'm thinking of one session in particular where someone came in, and she was frustrated and angry. And so she was just throwing clay back into that table and just moving it, you know? And then she felt so good after she had really let herself experience that and moved through it.
So, and I like what you said in your bio, that we have to learn to listen to our bodies.
Mm-hmm.
We have to learn that what works for a human being does not work for me. Yes. Everybody is different. Every person is different. Every fingerprint is different. And in order to help ourselves and our well-being and have that equilibrium that is just for you to make you feel good as a human being, you've got to befriend your body.
Yes.
So you've seen that with your students who had bullying issues in schools and self-esteem issues, that they just didn't know who they were.
Mm, yes. Well, I think that so often we're taught to orient externally in our society, and especially what I have seen and had many conversations in various ways with my high school students in particular about is just this, you know, with all the social media, they can get caught in these comparison traps or feeling like, you know, I mean, there's just so many different beauty standards, or, you know, basically the beauty standard is be like anyone but yourself,
right.
You know? And so to bring in art activities as a way to explore this, to explore, like I've done activities where, you know, you trace your whole body and maybe you're getting to know a part of you that you feel insecure about. And you're bringing beauty to that place by the colors that you use to color that part in.
Yeah.
Or you put a beautiful image there, you know, to help you refocus and build some love. And give some love to that place in your being. But I also really love to bring in mindfulness to the art classes and workshops and sessions that I do, so that we're actually starting from a place of orienting to our internal atmosphere, or as I like to call it, our inner landscape. And so that can look like just getting a sense for the sensations that are happening in this moment inside of our body. Whether it's, oh, I feel butterflies in my belly, or, oh, I'm feeling some tension in my shoulder. And you can start a session or a class in that way and just allow someone to freely move whatever that's feeling like inside their body, to take art materials in hand and to move that onto the page or the canvas.
Yeah.
And it's really beautiful.
So you're saying that the repetitive hand movements helps the body to heal.
Oh, yes.
In times of stress like that.
Yes.
It's almost like you put it down, right?
You're putting it down. Yeah. And what's really cool, too, is that the rhythm and repetition is communicating with the oldest part of our brain, which is our reptilian part of the brain. And that's its way of communicating. But so when people are having anxiety, they're in fight, flight, or freeze, you know, or anger. Some of these more intense emotions can be, sometimes we're operating from a place where like our higher brain functioning is turned off. Or some people might say like our lid is flipped.
Oh, welcome to my world.
Yeah, so many of us exist in this place, you know, with fight, flight, or freeze. And so what's beautiful is that the movements of our hands and the rhythm and the repetition. And when we get into what's called maybe a flow state, you could say, right? That's one of the reasons artists
like
love to make
Ghost.
Art.
Remember that movie Ghost with the two of them and that urn that they were making something? Remember?
Clay.
Clay. Clay. Clay something.
Pottery wheel.
Pottery. Yeah, and you know, you're right, because you know, people who seem to have found a way out of all this distress in life, they're very art-oriented folks. They have studios where they paint or color, they yoga, meditate. They have found their little niche. And we all talk about a world being a more kind, gentler place. And that's, I think that's what we're all striving for, right? Is to find that balance of a kindful nation.
Yeah.
And I think I'll bring Taisha in here too. And you see that too with the moms.
I do.
And the moms to be, that if they meditate or if they have yoga or if they go for a walk in the park or paint or color, it helps them.
I have at times had moms make memory boxes so that they don't forget themselves before having a baby, because the identity has changed. So what was your life like before you were a mom? Let's not forget her. It's a therapeutic way of collecting thoughts, memorabilia, pictures, drawing, journal entries to create those memories of who you are before you were a mom, because you don't want to lose her. She's still an important and vital piece.
Right. And it's important too, like we just went to art show on Friday, the colors, right? Mm-hmm. One of the artists, she said, well, I just love vibrant colors. It makes me feel alive, right? So you're saying too that you've seen with the students that you taught in school too, that their colors had a lot to do with how their mood was.
Oh yeah, I think color can really impact us. I mean, me personally, I love to choose colors that will match my mood of the day, or maybe if you're feeling down, you can use.
I love my lipstick and I love pink. If I wear my pink scrubs, I'm having a, like when I go to work in the nursing home, I find that my patients love my pink scrubs.
Yeah.
They love the red ones. The blue one, not so much.
Interesting.
And it's amazing because the color that you wear makes or break your day sometimes. Mm. It's just how you feel.
Yeah.
You know?
Do you ever suggest colors for them to work with? Because a lot of times it makes me feel that, you know, if I just need to see something that's brighter, mm-hmm. you know, or less bright, you know, I need that. But so I go in search of it because I don't do art.
Okay.
I've got two left hands. So it works. Does it work that way for you? Does it brighten the mood if you're like what Sita said?
Well, I think it really depends. My approach is that I like to first ask, is there a color that you're intuitively drawn to, right?
Okay.
Because they might have a sense of what they need to work with.
Or
they might, you know, if they're in a heavy place, they might need a dark color.
Right.
And then they might actually move through a process where they eventually are creating with bright colors by the end of the session, but they might start out needing to use the colors that
that's
match
gotta be
how
fascinating in your
internally.
Role to just watch that transition. Yeah.
Very much so.
And knowing that we live in a world of such a judgmental place, and children are being pressured, students are being pressured with social media and, you know, keeping up with the Jonases and keeping up with the Kardashians and all this thing. People it's like the social media is in your face, whether you're with TikTok and Instagram and Snapchat and everything. The students of today have a hard enough time just waking up and going to school and making it through the day. And then we see that in some areas they're cutting funding for art.
Yeah.
And how terrible is that, especially when it affects the minority communities as well? What are your thoughts on, you know, people who make the decisions to cut? And for some reason, it seems to be that art and music is always on the chopping block when they want to save money. But to me, that's a mistake.
I completely agree that it's a mistake. I think that it's part of the core curriculum. It needs to be the core curriculum included as that, because without the safe place to express or to learn those skills, I mean, so often I think art is approached in a way that teachers might be teaching technical skills, but I think any art teacher that might be listening right now also knows that they're creating space for much more than just developing technical skills. And it's to these things that we were talking about earlier, you know, just giving children, students, a place to be themselves. That's what art is really about.
Yeah, it's almost as though some of the educators in our country don't respect the arts enough. Mm. Because art, it helps the children to cultivate whatever is in them for later on, whether it's they're going to be in the culinary field or designing, a nurse, whatever it is, art affects us all.
Yes. Well, and it nurtures the imagination. And, you know, one of our great thinkers, Einstein, said, imagination is more important than knowledge. And we have a lot of challenging problems to solve in our world right now. And imagination, one way that we would see this in the early childhood part of education, is that imagination is the basis for critical thinking in the later years. And no matter what age you are, imagination is important because it's the precursor to having a solution, right? Yeah. You have to be able to imagine something before you can create it, right?
If only people who make the decisions for schools who cut the funding for arts and music and, you know, subjects like that, if only they would come and see how the children race to the art class.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
They just don't walk, right? And I've seen that with my own kids. Yeah. It's not something where they're going to la-di-da and walk slowly. They're running to art class for a reason, because they can express themselves.
Yeah.
They're part of something bigger in that class.
Yeah.
And so, and Taisha, how do we get more people to understand the importance of being creative and having art in our classrooms?
Just like when I mentioned with perinatal mental health, having the conversations, being able to have venues to show the importance of to those, the powers that may be, school board, city commissioners, the mayors, to be able to see this is what our children need. I know what we've done status quo in the past, but this is what our children actually need in order to flourish and thrive in this society that we have, because what worked 50 years ago is not working any longer. We need to be visionaries. We need to, as she said, tap into that creativity, because that is where true problem solving.
Yeah, and stop putting it on the chopping block where it affects especially the minority communities. We've seen, I mean, there's so many articles. I read an article in the Huffington Post recently where the minority communities were affected more, the Hispanic communities, when you take on. And then they quarrel when the children write on the sidewalk. Well, don't quarrel when you took it out of the schools. Mm. They're going to express themselves somewhere.
One way or another.
Somehow, right?
Yes. Yes.
So, Lauren, you're also going to be offering classes for small groups. Like, I could see wine and cheese and classes for women or people who want to do that, couples. So where can people find you? And do you have a website? I mean, I think it's wonderful that you're going to be using your expertise to help so many people to get their creative juices flowing again.
Oh, thank you. Yes, so you can find me on Instagram at aurin.leola. It's A-U-R-Y-N period L-E-O-L-A. And my website is currently under construction. I am updating my offerings right now. But if you give it a few days, you can also go to my website at ila-view.studio. So that's I-L-A, stands for Inner Landscape Art, dash view, V-I-E-W, dot studio.
So are you saying for Christmas this year, everyone should try to go on the route of a paintbrush, easel, paper, because
clay.
Oh yes, use your hands.
It could even just be keep your recyclables. You know, it doesn't have to be anything expensive. I mean, you can just use your creativity and your resourcefulness. But yes,
just
I think
eggs.
Art supplies are the best gifts that you can give, or a handmade gift. It's something that goes straight to the heart made with soulfulness.
Yes. When you speak from the heart. Well, for our listeners who tuned in today, I hope you enjoyed our segments. We had Taisha Pittman, mental health counselor for perinatal care, prenatal care, anxiety, depression. She's got a great practice here in COCO. And our friend Lauren Kennedy, who talked to us a little bit about using our creativity with our hands and our imagination, and how wonderful it is to have a kindful, mindful nation by using what God has given us, our hands.
Mm-hmm.
So tune in next week, and we'll be here with Ellen O'Neill and two more great segments. I swear I miss Ellen at this time of the day, because that's what she does.
Yes, she closes us.
She closes us up after I've chatted forever and ever. But Danny, thank you for running the board, and we'll be back next Monday with two wonderful segments.
Okay, love you. Bye-bye.
Right, thank you so much.
Thank you.